Welcome to Straight From The Muzzle, folks, where we are anything but straight. My name is Space.
And I'm Paradox.
And we welcome you to our episode, which is about what today?
Today we have another special guest. You have seen them at Anthrocon, most likely at this year. You've seen their videos all over TikTok. And also, most popularly, you've probably seen their adorable little puppet. We welcome to this episode, Hearth Fox.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you? And do you want to be called Hearth Fox, or do you have another name you want us to call you by?
You can call me Hearth or Fox, either or.
Cool. That works for us. Sorry. I'm just kind of bugging the throat. Why don't you tell us who you are, how long you've been in the fandom, and what you do in the fandom?
Well, my name is Hearth Fox. I used to be known as Danger Fox, but I did change my name a couple of years ago after I started to transition. I just kind of felt I needed something that felt more like me and less like who I used to be. So I've been active in the fandom for about 11 years, but I've been what's known as a Therian, since 2004, like when I was like 13, 14 years old. I got involved in that community and I'm currently 35, so it's been a long time. But yeah, I started really participating in the fandom after I dropped out of college. I went to school for art, for theater rather, an emphasis in performance. And then I just decided that I wanted to work on art about 11 years ago. And it's just been like a diligent, constant thing for me. But yeah, I've been doing art professionally as my sole source of income for a couple years now. I typically work in digital, but I do like to do a lot of traditional medias like watercolor, acrylic, wood burning. Wood burning is especially one that I like. And I'm always like trying new, weird, experimental like ways of making art and like, you know, putting those weird images like out there, you know?
I feel like we need more of that, more experimentals.
I take a lot of like inspiration from like all of my peers in the fandom because like I truly feel like, you know, we are all peers, no matter like what the follower count, like my art is just as good as like somebody who's like doesn't have the visibility. I've seen so many artists that are like underseen.
Oh, yeah.
And it blows my mind and it makes me upset. So I try and like retweet people when I see that just to give them recognition. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's no like competitiveness. We are just like a big creative community.
Yes.
You mentioned that you're Therian.
Yeah.
Now, on your bio, you mentioned that you identify as Fox Therian. What is the difference? And what is Therian, too? Because, I mean, I've wanted to know, but I've never really delved into it.
So, Therianthropy, it's not a belief system. It's a phenomenon. This is just something that happens to people. And it's happened for a very long time. We have, like, in the community, we've got, like, records that in contemporary, like, form go as far back as 1928, like, pinning down that people have felt this way and like seeing records of it in like media and old archives and stuff. It's when somebody feels like they are not entirely like a human being, they're experiencing reality. Like there's this sense of dysphoria, like they should be something else, but for whatever reason, they're a human being. And there's not like denial. There's not straight up delusion in our community. Like we all kind of know and accept that we are people essentially at the end of the day.
Right.
But it's something that, you know, regardless of how we explain it at the end of the day, like we still feel it. You know, we feel this dysphoria. Some people have it different than others. Like everybody is truly unique when it comes to therianthropy or other kin or like animal hearted or alter human or whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, it's just something that some people feel and we have like accepted it as part of our identity. That's why we have the label of Therian, which literally, it's like a theta and a delta, which represent the like interlocking of animal and human. And yeah, it's just like a big support network, our community, so that people don't feel as alone or feel as isolated because they go through something that is very difficult to talk about because most people just can't comprehend that anyone would feel different. I mean, like I don't like to put a parallel between that and being trans, even though there are a lot of us that are trans.
So like gender dysphoria?
It's like gender dysphoria. And there are people out there who can't comprehend gender dysphoria, let alone like identity dysphoria. And it's not just like, oh, I feel like I'm an animal or like something like that. Some people can be connected to, you know, things that don't exist. Like that's what otherkin used to mean. It was like fantasy creatures, whereas Therians are more like terrestrial, like earth-based. And there are people who identify as characters from fiction. And those people are called fiction kin. And I believe that they're just as valid. You know, like, I don't think that my experience has to fit neatly into a worldview, because, you know, most people won't ever like have to think about reality from my perspective. It's all like, this is just my life and it's how it impacts me. And I'm open about my life with the people that I care about. And that's why I embrace it as my identity. And as for Fox, like, it does come back to like my queer feeling of like feeling not quite male, not quite female, like as a non-binary person. Like, it kind of does stem from like my identity as an animal and not really aligning with, you know, the social construct of gender as humans have it. Like,
yeah,
foxes, their behaviors, once they like have kits to rear, you know, things like go a certain way, but they're not dimorphous. Like, they all look the same. You can't like spot a male fox from a female fox, like a Todd from a vixen, without like taking a really hard look, you know? So it just, I don't know, it makes sense to me.
I kind of feel that way a little bit. I've tried to explain it to some people and they kind of look at me with a straight face like, but you're a guy. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't necessarily feel one way or the other. Like, I don't feel like I'm female or male. I kind of feel like I'm a little bit of both.
Right.
And there are just parts of me that like that respond to be more feminine. And I kind of see myself more in that realm. And then there are other moments where I feel like a guy. And it's such a weird like thing to try to explain to someone. And they're just like, but why don't you just transition? I'm like, because it doesn't work like that. It's not like,
right,
I don't want to just be one specific gender. I kind of want to be both, if not a little bit more.
It's performative. It is a societal construct. And as a result, you know, you can decide not to consent to like fulfilling those roles. You can rebel and just say, you know, I don't think that what's between my legs defines who I am. So no. I'm going to identify as like a living creature before I identify as a gender, and just like do whatever feels right in the moment. I saw, or heard rather, a really good analogy where someone said that for some people, especially people like on the spectrum or some like non-binary trans people, gender is like being an electron, where when you're not being witnessed, you're kind of like amorphous and not really defined. But as soon as somebody like looks at you or gazes upon you, suddenly like you snap into like a gender role for that moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's how it feels.
It does. It's so precise and I love it. It's such a good metaphor.
It's a little ironic because Space and I were actually just talking about this very subject before you hopped on and then we started recording. Was just that feeling of, do I feel like I'm this gender or do I feel like this, but kind of like in between? So we were talking about the same thing. I just found it to be right, like really ironic. We were talking about it and now we're also talking about it again with you.
Yeah.
It just makes so much sense.
I feel like the feeling that we have with society staring at us, I feel like I'm in limbo. Like, I am that thing, but I don't feel like I'm that thing, but I can't be the thing that I want to be because it's not possible.
It's not socially acceptable.
Yeah.
There's a societal thing known as code switching, where you pick up on cues and you go into basically a character, you know, like you step into character because that's how you feel you're supposed to act in that situation.
Yeah.
And like, it's almost like tangential to a dramaturgical role, which is like, you know, how when you're at work, you behave a certain way because that's how you feel like you're supposed to act at work. But as soon as like people who need to see you as that are not in the room anymore, it's just you and your coworkers, you just turn back into people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's that, but for gender. And like, to a degree, like with me, it, you know, that it's like with species or like just identity in general, you know, like, I guess I have a very vivid imagination at the end of the day, but like, I still feel like a fox and I can't really help that.
I had, I've always been, I'm trying to think of that, like, not an activist. Like, over time, I've learned more about like the trans community and I've learned so many different aspects of it. I think at the very beginning, I was very close-minded, even as a gay at that time. And now I'm way more open-minded and I'm way more just like accepting of a lot of things that even I just don't even fully understand. But it wasn't until last week that I truly felt anger at something. And that's because a coworker was trying to explain to me a situation where they put gender dysphoria and being transgender as the exact same thing.
No.
And I was like, they're not even on the same playing field. They're on the ends of spectrums. Yes, they can be linked together, but they're not meant to be together as one. Like, you just can't do that. And for some reason, like, I tried to explain it to them and they just was looking at me like, I don't understand. And I'm like, of course you don't understand. You're a straight Mormon who only has one view. And I felt so angry. And in fact, I actually turned left to my other coworker who's also gay. And he's like, I looked at him like, am I wrong to feel angry? And he's like, no, I'm pretty pissed. So I'm like, oh my God. I was so upsetting. I just couldn't. I didn't know what to do in that moment. And it bothered me till I got home, too.
I've had the displeasure of having moments like that, too. Like one coworker who previously like was very friendly to me, suddenly starting to have problems with me as soon as I like transitioned. And like one day she called me over while I was on my lunch break because she was on hers. And she was like, Fox, look at this video. And she showed me this video of like this prank show where they got these guys to go on a blind date and they had a trans woman there. And they filmed their reactions. And she was like, isn't that so funny? And I was like, no, that's not.
Oh,
like,
no.
People get fucking murdered
For
being trans. And like, there's this whole stigma that we're like trying to trick people. And this shit's not helping. And it's not funny. And she was but it is funny. It's a joke. I was like, I couldn't,
it's,
you know,
you can't like wrap your mind. It's like, it may be funny to you, but it's not funny to me.
Although, talking society-wise and it being a joke. I mean, it has been made into a joke, not just like trans, but also like being gay and whatnot as a whole. Because if you look at like our media and whatnot, for a really great example, like not a trans woman, but like look at Mrs. Doubtfire. Like that's a great movie.
I love Mrs. Doubtfire.
I do love the movie, but like when you watch it, I guess now, it's so transphobic. Like,
it's very transphobic. And the other part of it is that and just like in Flubber, and this is another thing that Robin Williams did, is he plays this character that you're supposed to sympathize with, but he's actually just a bad person. Like in Mrs. Doubtfire, he's just a really terrible dad because he takes his work more seriously than his family, and his wife leaves him. And so he stalks them, and he dresses like a woman to do it. That is outrageous. That is
Tootsie, too. The same concept in Tootsie.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know if anyone's really like paid attention to it, but the very end of Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Both Ace Ventura movies are extremely problematic.
Really? I probably am not.
I grew up as a diehard Jim Carrey fan. I could quote The Mask all day, but like looking back at it now. So in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, it's very transphobic at the very end.
Oh yeah.
And then the entirety of When Nature Calls is extremely racist, like in portrayal.
Oh, yeah. No, it totally
black
is.
People and like people of the African continent. It is so bad.
Except for that rhino scene. There's that.
The rhino scene is the only saving grace. But you know what? We have Always Sunny now, and we have Danny DeVito doing that, which is
I love Danny DeVito.
Fun fact about that scene is like they didn't tell him how many people were going to be in the room when he slid out of the couch.
Oh my God.
They just got him to agree to slide naked out of a couch.
And when he slides out in that scene,
he's realizing how many people are looking at him and he's actually naked. All of that fear is genuine, like the confusion.
I love hearing like behind the scenes on like film sets and stuff when they get like genuine like reactions and I'm like, oh my God. So good.
Oh my gosh. Oh
man, I just want to keep talking about this, but we have other questions.
That's so great. Oh my gosh.
Paradox, why don't you ask a question?
Cool. Let me find a good one here. I mean, they're all great. And honestly, I'm with Space. I'm like, I could sit here and talk about gender dysphoria and like
to the knives.
For real. We could just have an entire episode just about that, especially since like I'm going to get into it just a tiny tad bit, but just because I got to share my little two cents. I recently read and finished Elliot Page's memoir, which if you have not read Page Boy, I do recommend. It is pretty good. And it really definitely helped myself in realizing my own transness. And I was like, oh my God, I felt so validated. But one thing that he did mention in the book in describing dysphoria is that at one point in time when he hit puberty, he literally went from being a young boy to becoming a character he had no interest in playing because his body forced him to play, you know, a role that he didn't want to play. And I was like, ah, I understand.
Was that Juno?
No, he hit puberty. And this.
Oh, okay.
So because, you know,
like puberty being the rule. Oh, okay.
Yes. Because, you know, before, and it was so true because before puberty, and again, like this is with my own experience and stuff too, because I was assigned female at birth. However, recently, and I say recently, it's been like my entire life with therapy and anything. Anyway, I've discovered that I lean very heavily on the masculine side. And so I recently have started testosterone. So hooray for me. But like, that's just been an entire journey. And like looking deeper into the dysphoria and whatnot, like that's just been one hell of a journey recently. So.
Boy, I can relate to that Elliot Page quote so hard.
Yes. Because, like I said, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, like, just sharing a little bit. So like, I have several diagnoses and, you know, a self-diagnosis or a self-assessment rather of autism. And like, I've done a lot of research into it and, you know, I do fit the archetype of PDA, but I have bipolar 1, which I've had my entire life. And so, you know, being a kid and being bipolar and like going through mania and depression is very, very traumatic and confusing and everything. So like, I had a lot of like mood swings and stuff that I was not in control of. And as a result, my parents got me put on some medication. And it was like, it was at the time when like Ritalin and stuff were just coming out. Like,
yeah,
I'm kind of dating myself a little here. So like,
I was on Ritalin when I was a kid.
There were a lot of experimental psychiatric meds that were on the market at that time. And so I got put on an experimental bipolar med. And I used to be like rail thin and like super flexible. Like I could put my feet completely behind my head. And I would do it all the time just to bother people. But I got put on this medication and like it made me gain like 40 pounds in like 2 weeks.
Whoa.
And jeez. Yeah, it like completely ruined like my self-worth because like from that moment on, like my mom would just like try and give me like Slim Fast shakes and, you know, like guilt trip me into like trying to work out and all this other stuff. And, you know, it's a little bit of a trauma dump, but like the way it affected me is like, you know, my mental health and my body both like betrayed me and like put me into this like, turn me into a person that I didn't want to be. You know, I didn't want to be like the overweight, like boy that, you know, had to cope with like bullying and stuff with a sense of humor and everything, you know, like it was very much foisted upon me. And like, yeah.
No, I felt that. I felt that in my soul. Oh my gosh. What is with like that generation of parents, by the way? Like, because if you look, there was a study done where they asked like the boomer parents the same question as like the millennial parents. And like the boomer parents got so angry and the responses were just so toxic. And so like, well, oh my gosh. But then like, if you ask like the millennial parents the same question, they're like, oh, I didn't realize I was doing that. Like, thank you for pointing that out. Or like, I will work harder to fix this. Thank you. And it was just like, oh my God, the parallel like difference. It was just insane.
There have been a lot of theories on why boomers behave this way. And like, I ignore all of the like lead poisoning stuff.
I was just going to make a joke on that.
I mean, you know, like, sure, it's there, but I feel like that's low-key ableist and saying that they have, like, you know, brain damage. I think that what happened was, you know, the silent generation or the greatest generation or whatever, the people that fought in World War II, the parents of the boomers, those people had to live through hell, and they didn't want their kids to ever have to feel an ounce of the turmoil that they did going through mother effing World War II and witnessing like nuclear bombs and Holocaust, you know, and like having that be on their mind of like, that's humanity. There you go. Like they wanted to protect their kids and give them a brighter world than that. And as a result, I think a lot of boomers became spoiled. Not all of them, but I think a good deal of them were kind of spoiled as kids. And as a result, like, you know, they had like the economy handed to them, and then they kind of like rigged everything so that it would come out into their benefit. And it's like, it's a lot of emotional immaturity. It's a lot of selfishness and entitledness. And, you know, like whatever the cause, like they're just kind of like mean spirited, like the kid that didn't get its way, you know, like Angelica from the Rugrats, you know?
Yeah. I like that one.
I feel with you, like when I was growing up, I have a genetic disorder called Klinefelter syndrome. So I have XXY is my chromosomes.
Yeah.
And it fucks up all of my hormones in my body and everything. And so I have to take this to balance out this, and I have to take this to balance out that. And it's so annoying. And I hate the fact that I know for the rest of my life that I'll have to be on medications just to balance everything out. Because I wish I wasn't, because I kind of want to just feel like normal, I guess, but that will never happen. Because my version of normal is, I don't know what it is. But when I was younger, part of me wishes that I was tested for it, because I didn't find out until like 10 years ago when I finally started doing some research, and I'm like, I'm hitting all the marks on this, and I'm wondering if maybe I have it.
Yeah.
But when I was younger, it was, you had ADHD, you had ADD, maybe you're autistic. And so I went from like doctor to doctor, studies. I was put through like gnarly studies and schooling. I went through multiple like special education programs because no one could figure out what was wrong with me.
Yeah.
I went from psychologist to psychiatrist to the point where it scarred me. I see a therapist now, but it took me a really long time to work up the courage to go to a therapist because I was just so badly scarred from having to go. And it was always like, it was, you know, there's something wrong with you. This is your fault, you know, this kind of a thing. And so
did we have the same childhood or something? Like
possibly.
Because it was the same thing happened to me. Like it was, and this is funny, and this is like an anecdote that I say, you know, when I'm talking about my therianthropy, but like when I was in preschool, I got kicked out, and it was like told to my mother that I had to have a psychological evaluation before they let me back into school. And the reason being was that I had convinced all the other kids that I was actually a wolf that just looked like a little kid. And I would run around and bite and howl and pretend to be an animal all the time. And as a result, like I started getting pulled out and put through like testing, like at every grade level. So I'm right there with you. And like, I went through the gifted program, but like, you know, they'd still treat me like I was stupid and like get frustrated with me if, you know, they put me in like a subject and I'm having trouble with it. They're like, but I thought you were gifted, you know, like that kind of junk.
Yeah. And like, I guess the hard part was, is I was always told I would never graduate high school. Oh. There's just no way you're going to make it. And of course, my mom kind of believed that. And so she was just like, you're just so lucky that you graduated. And I'm like, but I did graduate. We moved from California to Utah. I finally got to start over brand new. No one knows who I am. No one knows my issues. And I finally had grades that were like nominal for once. And I did graduate. And it wasn't because of, you know, someone said I might. It's because I actually did it. And so my mom has always just been like, you've been so lucky, you know, you're just so fortunate to have found, you know, someone who loves you for who you are. And I'm like, just stop. You can't talk to people like that. You can't. Yeah. You just can't.
Like, it's not a compliment. You're saying that you somehow think that we don't deserve these things because we aren't just like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, it's really upsetting.
It really is.
But yeah, oh God, talking about like abuse and everything. My mother was very emotionally immature and abusive and manipulative. And like when I was little, it was physical. And when I got big enough that like, you know, she couldn't hurt me anymore, she would like, you know, like mess with me and just real wild shit. Like if I misbehaved, I would be like sat down and like she would yell at me and like tell me she was going to go look up like a military school or something. And then she'd go watch TV.
Yeah. Same.
Oh my God.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I was threatened. Same like, people. I was
y'all
like,
the same, Mom.
We're going to send you off to a military school. Or I grew up in the generation where you were spanked with a wooden paddle.
What if we sent our mothers to military nursing homes?
That would be amazing.
Yes. My mom would not survive. Oh my God. Like, my mom is so narcissistic and just her profession, I think, is gaslighting because, oh my God, if you look up just the definition of a narcissist, I think you'll find a picture of my mom in there. It's insane. Yeah. So, like, hearing you say that.
I do try and stay away from straight up just using the word narcissist because some people do think that there's a stigma that comes with it, and I agree. And I think, you know, we want people to like seek diagnosis. We don't want them to be too ashamed.
Paradox's mom so, like, truly is narcissistic.
That's why I tend to say like emotionally immature, but you know,
no, that makes sense.
I've talked to my therapist and other like therapist friends and like a lot of people, including people from the other side of the conversation about this, and like I can see where they're coming from, so I just, you know, try not to make a thing of it. But like, I do put my foot down when I'm talking about like my mom being a narcissist, because that is a fact in my story that doesn't apply to anybody else. It's just a fact. I'm not using it to slander people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
No, I seriously, like, this is like a good, wholesome conversation. And I'm almost wondering if maybe we need to like, if you're wanting to, if you're okay with it, continue going down this route. Because I'm sure there are our listeners, there are people out there that feel the same way, but just never really gotten or heard it from our points of view or your points of view.
I'm totally comfortable sharing. I'm kind of an open book. Like when I grew up, I was very, very compartmentalized as like, you know, a queer kid in the South, and especially like a neurodivergent queer kid with, you know, identity issues. And I grew up like just stuffing everything down into boxes. And I had like a different personality depending on who I'd be around, because like some people only felt safe being one way and some people the other. And then like when I was home with my parents, it was like a totally different story. So yeah, but I'm totally cool talking about it, because like the thing about trauma is like, if you just start confronting it for what it is and not letting yourself like recoil when you think of it, it starts taking that sting away and you start to gain control over it. So
I gotta tell you, the therapist that I see, I absolutely love him. He actually stayed at I think he's a monk. That's for sure. I know that for a fact.
Ooh,
he also does Buddha. And so we do a lot of like meditation in like our sessions. We'll be like, well, what do you also want to talk about? I'm like, I don't think I really have anything else right now to talk about. He's like, how about we meditate? I'm like, okay, let's go for it. And at first I thought like meditation, like, oh, that's such a bull crap, but it's not.
Meditation's wonderful.
It really works. And there was like this one meditation where we kind of start off like in a boat, where he says like, imagine yourself in a place that you feel safe. And of course, in my mind, the most safest place I feel is actually in like a little paddle boat in the middle of the lake at night, looking up at the stars, oddly enough. And that's where I like to be. And so he's like, now gather all the like negativity and kind of think of it there for a second. And then imagine this orb, this glowing orb above your head, and it enters through your mind and through your body. And then you hold it in front of you and then let it go, let it blast out. And so in my mind, my blast was like a nuclear blast. It just blows up in all directions. And I felt like all the negativity, all the things that were weighing on my shoulders at that moment were literally just knocked out and into a, like non-existence. And it felt so amazing. And I'm like, I've never felt this before. I've never felt so empowered by myself before. So that was really interesting. I loved it.
That is wonderful from a multitude of reasons. A, I'm a Taoist. I read the Tao Te Ching. Taoism is one of the three major religions in China. There's Buddhism, Confucianism, and Taoism.
Yeah.
And Taoism is the idea that the universe has a way. Everything has its natural way that feels correct to it. And everyone's way is completely different. And the entire point of life is to find what truly makes you happy, what truly makes you happy, not what you want, not materialism, you know?
Yeah.
To really reflect and do a lot of soul searching. And then to pursue that so that you can be in tune with your way. And so that all things can kind of harmonize once we all sort of do what's best for
us. I've been unconsciously doing that.
Each other, you know?
Sorry, I was just going to say, have I been unconsciously doing that? Oh my God.
It's possible. So there's a cool book you can read if you would like to look into it called The Tao of Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, P-O-O-H.
Okay.
And Tao is spelled T-A-O, T-A-O, Tao.
Yeah.
But look up The Tao of Pooh. I've read it 6 times. It's really short. It's a really good read. And the whole point of the book is that it explains Taoism through Winnie the Pooh stories, because Pooh is a good example of a Taoist in Western literature. And in the way that he approaches things, his attitude, his relationships, all of it, he's just a really good Taoist. So he's a really good role model. But yeah, so in addition to that, that meditation, I also do, I'm a practitioner of what's called chaos magic.
Sounds awesome.
Which is a metaphysical spiritual practice where you work really hard to focus your intentions and learn to control your inner reality. Magic is not, I'm going to influence the world and change it. Magic is more realizing that you don't have influence over the outside world, but you do control your reality.
Yeah.
And how you see things and how you feel about things. So magic is all about tuning your subconscious so that you pursue things that you truly want, so that you get rid of things behaviors, beliefs, attitudes, addictions that are upsetting the balance of your life. It's like meditation, except it is actively trying to change yourself through ritual that you lump meaning into. So every motion, word, every ritual that you create for yourself, you're basically creating a command operation. It's almost like cognitive behavioral therapy, but with a lot more spookiness. It's great. It's a lot less clinical. It's more poetic and artful magic. But yeah. At the end of the day, it's the same thing as meditation, as cognitive behavioral therapy, as mindfulness. That is all magic. So you technically practice magic. That is amazing. That's so cool.
So I actually I do practice with tarot cards and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Divination
is wonderful.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. Honestly,
I've got so many tarot decks.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I was just gonna say that this actually kind of loops back to what we were talking about earlier in with Therion and whatnot. All of that just kind of connects. It's just finding your inner self. That is so cool.
It's a really, I gotta say, it's a really unique and powerful thing to feel like you're in control. But I don't know. I wish I had a way to visually show you how I felt in that moment, because it was so fascinating and exciting. And I've never felt such power before.
I'm really glad. Cool. So that, yeah, that specific thing that you did where you envisioned the orb.
Kind of just going from the top down.
Yeah.
And then
so that
exploding
is
outwards.
Classic energy, aura cleansing exercise. It's really good for grounding yourself or kind of unclenching your body, letting yourself completely relax and then letting go of just everything and taking deep breaths and just feeling you're washing yourself out, that light inside of you, that you're rejuvenating it. It's almost like just envisioning this stuff makes it real for us, like emotionally, like psychiatrically, like we feel more relaxed and everything. That's what manifestation is doing something to feel away.
It's so cool.
Yeah. And you know, like we have that kind of stuff, those kind of rituals in everyday society, like blowing out birthday candles and making wishes and everything. That is classic pagan ritual. Like, it's funny, like, to tell people that because they're like,
I've never thought of it like that.
They're like, oh, you're just like reaching now. I'm like, no, dude, like lighting candles and like envisioning something and then like extinguishing the candles and then keeping that like wish secret. That is the foundation of magic. You're putting something that you desire into your subconscious.
That is cool.
So when I blow out candles, I immediately cover it with a piece of paper. And I like to keep the smoke inside. I don't know if that's if that's something like it's something I instinctively always do. Whenever I got a candle, if it's in a jar, obviously if it's like a candlestick, that's totally different. Mm-hmm. But like it's not to keep it from like getting up and out. I feel like it's the right thing to do. Plus I love to see like the smoke on the inside of it just kind of swirl around for a bit.
Oh yeah.
And then I let it release afterwards.
Your witch space, you just didn't know it.
I wish. I have a book for like natural magic. Just
so question, when you look at the smoke, what are you like, are you getting feelings from it, or is it you're manifesting a specific feeling every time you do it?
It's like a peaceful feeling.
Yeah, that's
as it swirls
that's
around.
That's a ritual. That is a bona fide ritual. So like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
There's no like I'm not wishing for anything from it. It just feels right to do it.
Yeah, that's
I mean, that's sure some people are like, you're crazy. Like,
well, I mean, my true. Most common ritual for like calming and grounding and like feeling like that is to light a match while I'm thinking about the four elements. Use that match to light a candle and then light a stick of incense. And then I ring a meditation bell that I have either 3 or 5 times. And then I just sit down and just clear my mind and like let thoughts happen, but I don't engage with them. Like that's the easiest way to sort of like start meditating. A lot of people think the point is to like be empty, but really the point is to learn to disengage from that constant inner monologue, those constant thoughts that just bubble up. Don't engage with them, like sit back and look at them, but think of them as like leaves floating by on a stream, you know, like you are you. The only thing you're doing is breathing. Your mind is doing all of this other stuff. And then after a while of you just saying like, all that I am in control of right now is my breath. And I'm just going to like focus on breathing. Your mind starts to settle down and you really do like start to feel things in different ways and get different perspectives. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. I remember telling him once, because I was telling him about myself, and I'm like, there's this thing about rain, and I absolutely love the rain. I love the thunder. I love storms. But I told him there's something specific about the rain, because I feel like rain, it makes me feel like the world is at peace. And it's because the sound of rain drowns pretty much things out. But you can also focus in on certain key aspects during the rain. Like you can hear other things that you don't normally hear. I feel like I can navigate like my problems a little bit better when it's raining. I just feel like everything kind of compartmentalizes the right way.
Yeah. And there's a lot of reason for that. So like,
yeah, rain, I love it. I just love rain.
Water is the element of emotion. And so rain can be extremely calming because it is literally like washing everything. It's almost like an emotional cleanse, and it does have that nice calming effect. And like at symbolism, so there's a reason why most people can agree, like, okay, so there's like some fundamentals of like what things mean that we can kind of all agree upon, but past that, you know, everyone makes their own meaning. It just is like a lot of deep thinking and kind of like trying to understand why you see things the way you do, you know.
Yeah. What about your paradox?
Oh, I was just going to say that I would agree with the rain. we'll get into a little bit of my trauma dumping. So this happened years ago. Yay. But I remember, I know, hooray. So years ago, I was a teenager and I was going through a time and had an unfortunate stepfather who was quite abusive. And then when I turned like 17 or 18, he would love to like really just attack me and be like, well, you know, get the fuck out of my house, like whatever. And I'm like, dude, I can't take it. So I remember very specifically, I ended up just walking out of the house because I was like, I don't know what else to do and I can't go anywhere. So I just left, but it was storming. So I went out in the middle of the storm and I was gone for at least 3 hours in the middle of this rain. Like, so, I mean, I felt better. And it was weird because like, not only was it like chaos inside my home, but it was chaotic outside. But like the chaos outside was way more peaceful because at least like in the rain and in like the storm and the thunder, it like all of that ends eventually. So it made me feel better. And I guess a connection that I could make with like the rain and what you had said earlier about it washing is that like, I guess think of like going out to the rain, like letting the rain like just, I guess, wash over you, for lack of better words. Think of that as like maybe getting a shower. Like, what do you do? Like when you feel like gross on the outside, you go and you take a shower and you like, you know, you wash the dirt off. I think going out and walking in the rain for me is like an inner cleanse, even though it's like the rain is hitting me like, you know, and touching like my skin on the outside. But like on internally, like I felt better. And like I've done that. I don't usually go out in the storms now, but so like if it's raining, I do like to go outside and like let the like just the raindrops like just hit my skin and like I feel better. Like the air feels fresh because, you know, the rain is washing away all of that. So I feel better.
Yeah, that is a very good way to think about it. I love that.
So let me ask you this, with being Therian and pagan, how does that play into yourself as like a furry in the fandom?
So I'm not going to lie. Like, I came to the fandom after I had a very big falling out. Well, not really falling out as much as like getting bored with the Therian community when I was younger, because like things were a lot different. Like back in the day, like furries and Therians just didn't associate. They didn't mix. So when I was in that community, I was very much like not a part of furry at all, because you just weren't like supposed to associate. Like Therians felt like furries didn't take things seriously enough, and they were like weird and like perverse and like gave Therians like a weird reputation, whereas furries at the time kind of thought, you know, Therians are too serious and they're like way too into it and kind of like cuckoo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I had a splitting with just a lot of the people in my community because it felt like nothing ever changed. You know, like it felt like we were just stagnant. Like we are having the same conversations all the time. And I just got tired of it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to a convention and I'm going to see how it is. And I went to Anthrocon 2012. That was my very, very first fur convention. And I got really lucky and I actually bought a fursuit before I went to that con. So I had like prepared, you know, like I got a partial from a maker named Kilkoto. They're still active. They do great work. Look them up. And she did a wonderful job on my partial. And I used to be a green fox with like a dark green face mask and like a blue nose and tongue. And that was me as Danger Fox. So like I go to Anthrocon and I just have like so much fun that I kind of get over the Therian thing. And like I came into the fandom hoping that I would be able to kind of be seen and like have people who understood what it felt like to like want to be an animal. But like I found the majority of people really didn't get it on that level. And so I felt like very compartmentalized still. And it wasn't until like, you know, a few like handfuls of years later that like I kind of went back to the Therian community because I just didn't have anybody to talk to about these feelings. In fact, I would just lie and say I didn't feel them anymore. Like I said, I would say I used to be a Therian, and like as soon as I started transitioning, it really, really just bam came back. And I was like, God, I've been holding these feelings in for such a long time. And it feels really bad, like, kind of like confronting that. So, like, I kind of got on a mission, like, after all of that, where I wanted to make a place in the fandom for Therians who, like, started out as furry, like, and they came to the fandom looking for what I was looking for, but, like, not knowing this about themselves. And so, like, my goal is to, like, make an atmosphere where people can kind of, like, ask questions and not have this, like, lexicon of information that, like, is, like, strictly agreed upon. And, like, you know, back in the day, like, in Therian communities, they would, like, grill new members and really, like, press them and ask, like, them to justify their existence, essentially. And that, like, gave me a bit of an anxiety complex as a kid.
I felt that
so
way.
Like, I just didn't want any feelings like that. I wanted, like, total openness of, like, other kins, fiction kin, like, everybody, and to have it be, like, just a support network for people to, like, explore this part of themselves. And, like, so that was kind of my, like, what came out of getting into furry is that I made a place that I wish I had, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And definitely. It's actually pretty cool. So it's a Telegram network. We have about 300 members now.
Nice.
But yeah, it's been really fantastic.
I might have to join something like that, because now that, like, we're talking about it and whatever, I just, this is going to sound weird and oddly coincidental because it is, but, like, I remember distinctly, like, I've definitely told my wife, you can ask her, she's sitting right over here, but I remember, like, as a very small child, I was like, I am a dog. And, yes, like, that's all I wanted to be. Like, as a child, I'm like, nope, I don't want to be a person because people are gross, but I want to be a dog. And, like, I insisted. I remember now, like, I insisted as a small child that I was like, nope, I'm a dog. And that's that. Like, so, well, interesting. We just have some,
I think, you know,
shoved down things.
Therianthropy does run in the family a little bit. So my cousin, who is my grandmother's identical twins, like, grandchild. So it's like a weird family tree thing. Mm-hmm. But she's, you know, my cousin. When she was young, she would pretend to be a lion 24/7. And if,
oh,
like,
I love that.
If something, like, stressed her out, she would get on all fours and she would start to growl and, like, gnash her teeth. And, like, she did that in the middle of, like, school testing, and they were like, oh no, something's wrong. And I remember hearing that, and, like, at the time I had, like, been in the Therian community for maybe, like, a couple years, so I heard that and I went and I just kept it to myself.
Oh my god. That's so weird, because, oh my god, now I remember, like, in middle school, I apparently just shoved it down in the back burner of my brain. It was just like, eh, nah, I was just a weird kid. No, holy crap. Like, I remember in, like, middle school, I was like, I'm definitely an animal, and I would, like, growl at people. Oh my god.
So,
shit.
Just tying things back to gender once again, like, you know, when we're born, we're all babies. And then as we're growing up, like, we're all kind of the same, you know, whether we're, like, whatever we're assigned at birth, like, you know, we have gender forced upon us. But, like, when kids are just playing, you know, we're all kind of the same. It's not until, like, things start to click in, like, you get a little bit older and you start to really, like,
become conscious,
go for and accept the gender roles that were given for you, and just kind of, like, accept that as your identity. Like, you know, some people just don't ever feel that happen, or they feel like the gender that they were given is wrong, you know? And I feel like with, you know, Therians and alter humans and stuff, it's like that period of time when kids feel cool, like, playing pretend and, like, expressing their identity in a different way. And then, like, what happens is, like, you get old enough and, like, you know, you still have an active imagination, but part of you says, like, okay, you know, I'm a person, this is human society, and this is how I want to interact with human society. And some of us just go, like, but I don't want to do that. Why is this the only option, to be, like, a person and, like, live like this? You know, like, this doesn't feel right at all. And I use the analogy of Odysseus in the Odyssey, where he's like strapped himself to the mast of a ship as they're sailing past the island that has all the sirens on him. And like all of his men, like they plug their ears up, but he says like, oh, you know, let me just hear the siren song and everything. And like, it feels like a siren song. It feels like this unexplainable draw to thinking like I'm a fox, and like that just releases serotonin into my brain, and I don't know why, you know, like it's just always like been there, and it's like gotten stronger. And then at like a, you know, a younger age, like 13, 14, I like identified and isolated that and went like, holy crap, there is a word for this. There's a word for these kinds of people. I'm not alone, you know?
I am a bear.
My brain.
There's just interjecting real quick. There's a really, really cool book called Steppenwolf by Hermann Hesse. And that is the source that I referenced that goes back as far as 1928. That's when that book was written. And it is about a man who believes that he is also a wolf, even though he just looks like a man. And like, there's an entire excerpt in that book called The Treatise on the Steppenwolf. And it's like breaking down like line by line exactly what Therians go through. It's incredible.
Wait, what was it called again?
That's cool.
Steppenwolf by Hermann Hesse.
I found it on online space. I can send you the link.
No, it just kind of it reminds me of another book. See, right now, both Paradox and I are reading this book called Furry Planet by Joe Stryker. He also wrote Furry Nation. And he talks a lot about in this book, like just a lot of, he references a lot of like authors and stuff. And there's this one book Hermann Hesse sounds really familiar, and I'm wondering if he mentioned.
So he wrote a book called Siddhartha. That's probably where you heard of him from.
Ah, okay.
Siddhartha, it's got a blue cover. It's got a picture of the Buddha on it.
That sounds really familiar.
There's one book. It's kind of like, so it's written by a gentleman by the name of William Kotzwinkle, and it's called The Bear Went Over the Mountain. And it's basically this bear, this guy, this I think it's like this guy that feels like he is a bear, and he is a bear, and he slowly becomes the bear. And he's like roaming around New York City. It's really interesting. I saw it and I'm like, I'm going to put this on my list and I'll probably buy it.
That sounds really interesting. That sounds like a good read.
Yeah. And then there's another one, Life of Monster Dogs. That's an interesting one too. So basically the way to explain it, basically this mad scientist takes these dogs and turns them into like humans essentially. And so they have like puppet hands and stuff, but you don't see the strings and all the maneuvers. You just see like them wearing clothes and they walk on their hinds, but they can only do that by, you know, with a cane, and they present themselves very human with like voice boxes and stuff. And society accepts them pretty much and loves them, but they hate themselves because they themselves are not what they want to be. It's a really, it looks like a really good book, and I can't wait to read it. I think that her name is Kirsten Backus. I think she's a furry for sure, but I'm excited for that when I'm done reading this book, which is taking me forever.
It's taking me forever too.
It's a book.
I have to confess to something. It is taking me forever to read it. And it's now I'm going to, first and foremost, the book is good. I'm not saying that it's bad because it's good. Okay. It's just,
chapters are really long.
Yes. But here's my problem is that it feels very textbook. And because like I have ADHD and I'm like, oh my God, textbook. It reminds me of school, and I never did very well in school. So I'm like struggle bussing through this book, even though like, again, it's not a bad book. It's really good. I love the information that's in there. It has a lot of like, you know, like you said, extra stuff, like with like book recommendations and stuff that, you know, oh my God, I can't talk. Jesus Christ.
I think the best way to like sum it up, just like with the first like few chapters of reading it, I felt like I was rediscovering the fandom all over again, but like in a different point of view.
Yeah. And that's a thing is that like, I think that, you know, getting involved in the fandom is fun. And it's allowed to be fun on a superficial level because it's exploring identity and just doing whatever you want, like superficial in that way, not saying that like it's not impactful or like significant in people's lives. It's just like, I feel like when you first get involved, like you are there for the thrill of it. But like the longer you're here and you don't like grow out of it, like some people grow out of being furry, but like, you know, some of us are here for the long haul.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like once you start asking yourself, like, why do I feel this way? Why do I feel these things? Like, that's when it gets exciting again.
It does. It does. You know, kind of sidetracking here for a second, because I'm really curious. We heard rumor that the Puppet Fox is your current persona. Is that true?
So Wiggle is their own entity at this point. I made Wiggle to be just kind of like a little white fox, just a little fun guy that kind of looks like me, but it's not exactly on model because I didn't want to just
a little man.
I kind of made it on purpose for people to like look at and go like, oh, look at that little guy. And it's not like something's, you know, it's not like a persona. It's just like he's like his own little thing. But I use Wiggle as like a proxy almost, like. It's like I get to fursuit without having to put the whole thing on. You know, I've got two fursuits and I'm making another updated one of myself. But yeah. I'm 35 now and boy, it gets hard to wear those things. So, you know, having a puppet, I think, is wonderful, not only in that, like, it allows me to be like a little tiny fox, but it also like opens up a lot of like accessibility for people who I think otherwise would not be able to fursuit for either financial reasons, for physical reasons, for like disability. Like, I think puppetry is kind of like the answer for the fact that only like, what is it like? What's the statistic of furries that own a fursuit? It's very small. It's like a lot smaller than I thought it was.
I really think it's like within the
stigma of furries that are wearing a fursuit is very high. I've talked to a lot of people who are like, yeah, I'd like to join the fandom. I just don't have a fursuit. I'm like, you don't need a fursuit.
You really don't.
Yeah. You don't even have to have a fursona. But funny let me ask you something about fursuiting, because I feel like maybe you might have an answer that I might be looking for, because I don't believe my husband doesn't have one. And I've tried to talk to my friends and the answers I get are just not. They just don't really resonate. A lot of people, when they fursuit, they get to be free in a way. It feels freeing to them. They get to perform and just enjoy themselves. When I put the fursuit head on, I shut down and I feel very insecure and I don't feel free. And I can't figure out how to break free of that. And I don't know what to do because I love the fursuit that I have. It's great. But I don't know. Part of me, like, they're not the two. Like, okay, it's like a spirit leaving the body, right? And the body's trying to go back to the spirit. But I can't get the two to mesh together. They're just two separate entities. And I can't figure out why I don't like the fursuit, even though I have a fursuit. And I feel like I should. I feel like there is this stigma that, or this stereotype that I should want to fursuit.
Oh, I totally get that. I totally get the social pressure of like fursuit as much as you can because we like fursuits. We love pictures of fursuits. So people want to see them more. And I get that. And I get people who love to do it. But like, you know, someone who has like health problems that are developing, like it's harder to do it for longer periods of time. So the way that I would get you to get excited about fursuiting, it would depend on a couple things. First, you have to ask yourself, do you think that the lack of enthusiasm or the shutting down is because of sensory overload, because of your acute awareness of all of this stuff that is just all over you? You know what I mean? Like, and not being able to not feel it there. You know what I mean?
I don't believe it's that. I believe it's that I feel like I'm being judged.
No, I get that.
So what I would say in response to that is to do this. It would be to fursuit for yourself, not for anyone else. And the way you start doing that is when you've got time, put your suit on and go stand in front of a mirror and just look at yourself and watch yourself move and just entertain yourself with your own fursuit. And like, pretty soon you'll start to like see the mannerisms that you like, the poses that look good, the head tilt that makes the good side really come out and everything. And then you start to realize that the suit kind of gives you this layer of invincibility because people aren't looking at you. They're looking at this thing you're wearing and you are operating it. You don't look like a person to them. You look like your persona. And so you kind of have this like superpower of this like exterior that's bright and like engaging looking and neat. And like, it looks how you want it to look and you're proud of it and everything, you know, like it's having like an idealized appearance for a little bit. You get to just enjoy yourself and act out in ways that like express that joy and just do it for you. Don't do it for anybody else. That's the best advice that I can give.
It's good advice. I like that one. I feel like that one's better than advice I've been given.
Cause I mean, I like going back to my theater history, but like, you know, I had to use, God, I was getting up on stage from like sixth grade to like college, like doing performance and acting and everything. And, you know, a lot of people get stage fright and that never really was an issue for me because like, when I'm on the stage and the lights are on, you can't really see anybody. So it's like, you just forget that they're there. And the reason that theater always excited me was because there was a script and like, I was always terrible at socializing. I was always awkward. I didn't pick up on cues.
Yeah.
You know, I'm weird. I have the wrong responses to things a lot, but when I read the script, I know exactly what I'm supposed to say. And I know exactly how people are going to respond to me. And I get to play a character of someone who's confident, who like is not me. And like, as an extension, like with like people not seeing the real me, they only see the suit. Like, it's like, I've got those stage lights on all the time. And it's like, I get to be this goofy, unhindered self, you know, when I fursuit. And I know a lot of people get really bashful when they suit because they're shy and, you know, everyone's different. Like, some people are really sweet and shy and they, it takes a lot longer for them to warm up, you know, but everyone doesn't have to have the big bombastic personality and they just have to feel the joy, you know?
That's different. I like that.
Oh, good. I'm glad
too. This is such an insightful episode.
So it really is. Like, we're looking inwards rather than talking outwards, which is really interesting.
So another thing I kind of wanted to bring up, and it wasn't in the questions, but like, people have asked me about this, so I figured I'd like bring it up. So the reason that I made Wiggle like 2 days before Anthrocon, because I was working like 12-hour days on art, like working commissions like during the daytime and then going into my workshop at night and like firing up my wood burner and making like wooden things to put in the Anthrocon art show, because that's like a big source of revenue for me every year.
Yeah.
And I was so burnt out. I was so tired. And most of all, I was not looking forward to Anthrocon at all, because the year before I lost a friend. Well, we all lost a member of our community named Kohi. She was a coyote and she was amazing. And she sadly took her own life while we were at Anthrocon last year. And the news hit and it was like something got torn out of me. It hurt so bad. And, you know, like I went to her funeral afterwards. I had to check into a psychiatric ward because I was not safe. Like, it completely knocked the wind out of my sails. And so I wasn't looking forward to coming back to AC because of just memories and knowing that she wouldn't be there and like just remembering how bad it hurt last year. So I made Wiggle because I always kind of liked puppets, like marionettes and everything. They were all over the shows that I watched when I was a kid. And my grandparents had like a bird marionette and I used to play with it all the time. And I always kind of wanted one. So like, I had a head that I had made out of Sculpey when I was just experimenting with sculpting. And I looked at it and I was like, you know, this would work. So I just quickly like threw together like a little body out of an old tank top and like some little wooden bits. And I just kind of knew how marionette controls worked. Sometimes I just know things from thinking about them too long.
Yeah,
I get that.
So I made a control for Wiggle and like wired them up and did some practice runs. And I didn't think about it too much. Like I made Wiggle to give me something positive and fun to focus on while I was at the con. And something kind of happened as like I piloted Wiggle around.
Something magical happened.
Yeah, because so I got there on Thursday. Well, I got into Pittsburgh on Wednesday and I was at a friend's house and I get into the con on Thursday and like Thursday, I am a depressed wreck. I am just so sad. And like, I've got no energy and like I hang out with some friends at a room party and it kind of takes my mind off things. But then I go down to the waterfront where there's this mural that we painted for Gohee and I just like lost it that night. I just didn't feel good. So I went to bed and I woke up and Friday I went to the dealer room and I just sold stuff all day. And then that night I was like, you know what? I think I'll take the puppet out. Like, I was going to on Thursday, but I was telling myself, like, no one's going to care about a little puppet. They're going to think you're weird. And so, like, I brought Wiggle out, and I was like, well, what would Gohee do? Because Gohee was, like, the life of the party. Gohee always knew where the fun was and would, like, break rules for the name of fun, but not in, like, a harmful way, you know? Like, so I kept finding myself asking as I was like bringing Wiggle around, like, what would Gohee do? And like, Wiggle kind of became like an avatar for Gohee's spirit, like not a direct representation of her persona or anything, but like
it you channeled
this. Yeah. I just channeled Gohee through that. And it felt like she was there with me the whole time. And it really like made a huge impact on me. And I was like completely humbled by everyone's reception of it. Like you know,
every time I was on Twitter and I was just like, what is this puppet? And it was it's different. It was something that was out of the norm and I wasn't expecting it. But when I saw it, it made me so happy.
Yeah, that's
so happy.
Yeah.
I loved seeing more posts of it. And oh, I just love seeing it. I'm like, this is something I need.
So I remember
not
like,
to ruin the tender. I'm so
go
sorry.
Ahead,
I was,
go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say not to ruin the tender moment, but the first video that I saw of Wiggle was totally at the Anthrocon rave and people were throwing money at it.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. I was like, this is
so
the best.
Good.
So here's another thing like that I'll just address. So when Wiggle was first going around, some people drew some Rule 34 and...
Oh, no.
Well, here's the thing. People did that. And then some people messaged me and they're like, just so you know, that's happening. And I'm so sorry. And I was like, actually, I think that's kind of funny. And I think Gohee would have thought that shit was hilarious. So
right on.
No, I mean, I think
don't
it's
have
funny.
A problem with it. I don't really care.
That's cool.
If people are having fun, whatever. You know what? It's all good. Wiggle is, like I said, Wiggle is their own entity. They have grown beyond my control. They're like a Telpa at this point. Like, Wiggle has their own like life and reputation, and people think of Wiggle in ways that I will never know because it's just spread that far, you know?
Like, okay, there's a video, Dare to be Stupid, and I love watching it. It's just such a like happy-go-lucky, just messing around in like a toy store kind of a thing. And I just love seeing Wiggle.
Thank you.
There's something about Wiggle that really just makes me like, it breaks me out of a moment. Like if I'm just not feeling it, most of the time I do go back to like Twitter profiles that kind of like bring me back into like a happy moment. Yours is one of them because of Wiggle, because of when you started arriving, and I'm like, I got to go watch this stuff because it just makes me smile, and then I can kind of just get back on track and do things.
That makes me really happy to hear because honestly, same. Like, I love like seeing silly things, and like the fact that Wiggle turned into something that made people happy, like, and that he kind of like got his own like personality and everything, like, it makes me happy too, because I'm like, wow, whoa, this is bigger than what I ever imagined it would be. And like, you know, it's not just that I'm making funny videos. It's that people are like responding to it and like a way that I didn't think they ever would. And like, yeah, it fascinates me. Like, one thing as an artist that I like to tell people is that, like, when I was a little kid, nobody ever explained to me that everything that exists was made by somebody. Every picture, every painting, every sculpture, everything was made by somebody. And that I could be one of those people that made things. No one ever explained that to me. So like, when I grew up, like, developmentally, I hit some milestones kind of slow, but like, I was advanced in a lot of other ways. Like, realizing that I had the power to create was life-changing for me. And like, looking at the reaction, the response, and thinking, holy shit, I made something that people like, is so surreal. And it brings me so much joy.
Yeah. Do you think that when you return next year, you'll not necessarily be as sad, but maybe more, I guess, looking forward to it?
Yeah. And you know, that's
because you got to channel a friend into something that you made.
Something that I've had like really work on. So like, friends of Kohi and I, we have a weekly grief call on Telegram, and like, it's just a big group of, you know, mutual friends of hers, and we just talk about how everyone's doing. We're there to support each other, and like, I've been to almost every single one, and like, as a result, I've gotten to become really good friends with people who I was too nervous to talk to, who I thought were like too cool to ever talk to me. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know that feeling.
Yeah. And like, as a result, like, it felt like that was like, you know, my friend's final gift to all of us, is that like, you know, she brought us together because we wouldn't have otherwise on our own. And she always brought people together. But like, after AC this year, like, for a whole year, like, after the last one, like, it felt like life just stopped and like everything just halted and nothing felt real. And like, you know, struggling to understand like why your friend would choose to, you know, in their own life rather than reach out. Like, after this last AC, it felt like I had done enough to like honor her memory that life started again. And like, I am looking forward to AC next year. I'm looking forward to like a lot of things. And that's really wonderful that I have the ability to look forward to things now, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to leave on that particular note.
Yeah, we can leave on. We've got other things we can bring up. It's all good.
What is something about you that most people familiar with your work, with you yourself, don't know?
Well, I mean, I mentioned earlier that I practice chaos magic, like, individually. I'm not very, like, open about that. Like, what I do, like, what my rituals are, what they mean. Like, you know, I share a picture of my altar every once in a while, or, like, something that I made, like a wand or whatever. But I'm really insular about that, unless it's with other people who, like, I trust and who, you know, share weird, like, universal beliefs as me. A lot of my work has elements of chaos magic, like, folded into it. A lot of meaning and like symbolism is folded into some of my more like serious and ethereal work, and like emotional stuff as well. Like, I channel a lot of like my spiritual self into that work, and like, you know, I'm not really open about it, so I don't think people notice, but like, I feel like they can kind of pick up on like when there's a vibe present in my work. It's just maybe they don't know exactly like what it is.
I like that.
I also am I do music. I'm a musician.
I heard you mention that.
I've actually seen that you've done some. You did some woodwork on what was like a switch box.
Oh yes, I did.
Or a soundboard.
So I did a couple of things. I did wood paneling for an Arturia Microfreak, which is a weird, like, synthesizer. It's just a really unique synthesizer, and I just wanted, like, nice wood panels. So I did some, like, cool, like, mandalas and adhered them, and they look great. But, yeah, I play music. I play a lot of different synthesizers and stuff. I work without a DAW, a digital audio workspace, so I just use hardware. Yeah, it's been, like, a passion of mine since, like, COVID happened. I started taking music a lot more seriously. Like, I understood rhythm fundamentally, and I would beatbox and loop and everything, but, like, started learning music, and, like, I just took off, and it's like, holy crap. Wow.
I grew up in a very musical family. My brothers, they all play guitar. They all play piano. We all sing. But I have what I call the gift, but also the curse, which is I can hear the music. I don't necessarily need the sheet music because I can play it back. Mm-hmm. But the curse of it is that I can also hear flaw, which... Yeah. Sucks because I'm like, it makes yay, I'm really... in a choir. Oh no.
Yeah. Hope they're all on key. Really picky about the music. And that's one of the reasons, like, even though I did musical theater for over a decade, I don't like musicals most of the time. I just don't like them because I don't like the way they're written. They just don't do anything. Because
they all sound the same.
Like, being in one is fun, but, like, God dang. And there's a reason they all sound the same. It's because they're all written by the same, like, 8 white guys. And then, like, you know, there's a couple of women and then, like, you know.
And I guess that's like a thing. So, like, I tried to explain that to someone who loves, like, Broadway musicals. And I'm like, but they all sound the same. He's like, no, they don't. They're all different. I'm like, right. They're all different in their own little ways. But they all follow pretty much the same tunage. And they all sound the same. Like, I know what to expect in music wise, and it bugs me. Like, I love Hairspray. I love watching it. Oh, but well, the music drives me nuts.
Hairspray is written by John Waters. Like, so there's your queerness. There's your queer in. That's why people like Hairspray. Like, it's all like Andrew Lloyd Webber or Robert and Hammerstein. And
yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, ugh. I have to confess something, and people think this is a sin, but I cannot stand the musical Grease. I hate it. I think we need to move on and delete it. I think we don't even need to keep it.
I have watched exactly that. Like 2 minutes of it because I always fall asleep watching because I'm so bored. It is,
like, musically, it is so boring. And then, like,
it is. I don't understand what's so great about it.
I find it, like, gross because I feel like it romanticizes the 50s and it's like, they're clearly glossing over racism and, like, sexism and, yep, like, all this.
It's like, I never liked the 50s really anyways.
Literally the whole play, if you look at the actual play and not the movie, it starts as a flashback at the high school reunion, and you see all of, like, the characters all, like, old and, like, aging and, like, way past their prime, and then the play starts as a flashback to them in their good old days. So it's literally just Good Old Days the musical. It sucks.
That's really dumb.
I'm not like, yeah, I've told people, like, yeah, I don't really care for Grease, and they're like, what? And they'll flip out. I'm like, it's not that great of a musical. It really isn't.
It doesn't even have the privilege of being, like, the first American musical that goes to Oklahoma, which is still problematic, but you know what? Better musical.
Sorry, so every once in a while, I'll just be like, Oklahoma, where the wind comes. And so I'll be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm singing. And they're like, well, really? Like, and I'm like, I could be singing something else. 76 Trump, you know, and they get, like, upset. They're just like, that's so annoying. I'm like, yeah, well, there you go. That's musicals for you. They're annoying, but they're fun.
God, that's the song I bust out when I want to impress people, and I show them my musical theater voice. And I'm like, oh, Oklahoma, where the wind comes whipping down the plains.
Yes. Yes. It's just because you can, like, really, like, belt out. Like, it's just, I don't know. Yeah.
My favorite part of that goes, like, Oklahoma, every night, my honey lemon... I sit alone and talk and watch a hawk making lazy circles in the sky.
That's so cool.
Yes. That's awesome.
I wanted to see, well, okay. I'm kind of tied because I don't know if I necessarily want to see it. Wicked. Everyone makes a big deal about it.
Oh, Wicked is fun. Wicked has,
I've not seen it yet.
Wicked has representation. It's a good musical.
I don't care for, and I probably never will see it. It's the one that Lin-Manuel, what is Hamilton. His name? Thank you. I don't have any.
It smacks of jingoism, in my opinion. Like, it's romanticizing American history. And gross. It's like, you know.
And then, like
yes,
I'm sure, not a Lin-Manuel, big fan of him as an actor either. And then he's like in all of these other movies. And I'm just like, I'm not.
I love his work in DuckTales, but
I haven't seen,
I don't seen his like work his, in there. Musical.
Yeah. Yeah.
In DuckTales
like,
and the
new I hate DuckTales. To say it, he seems like a one-hit wonder for musicals. That's about it.
Oop.
He did Moana. He did a lot of work in Moana. Moana's great. He? Yes. Okay. His work in Moana is actually really good because he worked with the Maori people like to accurately portray things, and you know, a lot of Maori artists actually contributed to the soundtrack themselves. Hamilton, it's just I couldn't care less about Alexander Hamilton, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it just doesn't seem, well, it just doesn't really seem that exciting. I'm like, American history.
Like, if you're the kind of person to go, wow, George Washington, then you'll probably like it, but
no.
No. No, thank you.
No, it's just, I don't know. I'd rather learn about other history than American history.
I will say this, as a former musical theater person who like exclusively hung out with other musical theater people, it is pretty cool from like a musical theater person standpoint, because it's like, wow, this is my in to start listening to rap. And it's like, no, man, just go listen to like Kendrick. He's really good. Like anyone, go listen to anyone, you know, like
speaking of rap, do you ever listen to Chance the Rapper?
Oh, I love Chance. Yeah. I listen to a lot of music. I listen to a lot of rap and
I love his stuff.
One of my favorites, his name is Aesop Rock.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. I love Open Mike Eagle. Shout out to Open Mike. He's amazing. Earl Sweatshirt, you know, amazing. Doom, one of the greatest. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a whole lot.
I feel like rap doesn't get enough like attention, and I guess.
So here's a cool, and this is kind of related because
the are you laughing from, over there?
No, I'm sorry. My cat just batted my head. Oh. I was like, no.
Rap is awesome.
So no, I'm sorry. No, no, no. Rap is okay. My cat is like, pay attention to me. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
Like, speaking of just two things. First is like, in the musical Hamilton, the lead singer of a rap group called Clipping is Thomas Jefferson, as in the original cast. And if you go and you listen to his work in Clipping, you're going to be like, what the hell is this man doing in Alexander Hamilton? Like, holy this guy raps really hardcore. Like he sings like songs, like he's got one called Body and Blood, like about a woman who's a serial killer. And it's like, twerk something, girl, like eat something, girl, kill something, girl. I'm like, oh my God, like this guy's in Hamilton. And two, there is a rap label in the fandom that Ash Coyote is working with. And she just released the Fandom Volume 2 about Magic Records. And that includes like DJ Woozy, Fendi Husky, a lot of really cool like black and like queer and indigenous creators in the fandom are involved with Magic Records. It's amazing. So look them up. It's MAJIC, I believe. But yeah, look them up. They're amazing.
I'm looking it up right now. Oh, yeah, this looks cool. I'm going to favorite that so I don't forget it. Seems really neat.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot of really good work. They're like revitalizing the music scene in the fandom, I feel.
That's and cool. I feel like I haven't really seen, I know there's music in the fandom. I almost feel like music kind of just, it's either your Pepper Coyote or What's His Face, and that's it. You know? And I know there's so much more.
If I can plug a couple of musicians in the fandom that need
more. Go for it.
There's Skuro, a.k.a. I've Made Too Much Pasta. I actually did album art for his last record called How to Drive a Bus. And Will Toledo of Car Seat Headrest actually helped work on that album with Skuro. Will Toledo, part of Car Seat Headrest, and also One Trait Danger. Also, he performed as One Trait Danger with the other person in the group at Anthro New England. They did a show for Anthro New England.
That's so cool.
So there's also In Full Color by Scales. Scales is the partner of Remy Griffin, who is the con chair of Anthro New England. Scales is the guitarist and the lead singer in that band. Amazing band. And then, yeah, a lot of people out there like, look up Goji. G-O-J-I.
Oh, I have a post. Oh my God, it's so funny. So at BLFC last year, there was a poster of Goji like on the wall. And Sparrow's like, oh, dude, I want this. I'm like, put it in the bag. It doesn't fit. And I'm like, oh, well, put it in my bag. And so I put it in my bag, and then I totally forgot to give it to her. So it just hangs. Like, the poster just hangs in my art room. And I'm like, yes, it's so cool.
Do you like Goji?
I haven't listened to them yet. But I just really love the art poster itself.
Definitely look up Goji. And there are a lot of associated like acts. Absurdist, that's another really cool musician, although they're not really active in the fandom as much anymore. She like transitioned. I keep in touch with her. She's really nice. Yeah, there are a lot of really good musical acts in the fandom if you are willing to look for them. And I think the problem with musical artists in the fandom is that it's a different ask. Like, you know, as an artist, like I can just toss a piece of art up on my, you know, social media and people look at it as long as they want and then they move on. With music, you're really asking for a time commitment. And some people, they're like, they just don't have the attention span to like really commit to it. So they just kind of, you know, move on. And like with me, like my pathological demand avoidance makes it so that like if somebody tells me to listen to something, it makes me feel like I can't do it. That like it just, I don't know what it is, and it stops me from like clicking the link and listening. Like, I'm afraid that if I don't like it, I'll somehow like be a bad person. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I get that.
But like, yeah, I think that furry music also kind of has like a bit of a reputation that it's currently, I think, successfully getting over of, like you said, like it used to be just like Pepper and Fox and More everywhere. Those were the acts. And like, you know, I know some really, really talented musicians and composers like Tonya Song, who like, you know, would get passed up for like acts like that. And I think that con chairs are starting to realize that we need to move on and we need to keep enriching like furry culture. We got to keep the art alive. We got to keep giving platforms to new people, not just the safe choice. You know what I mean?
Have you ever listened to Nervous Vulpus?
Nervous Vulpus?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. What
they're a rock band.
I love them.
They played last year. We had them on as a guest before. I don't know how to explain it. I don't understand. I think it's weird for me even to say it, but I went and saw them in concert at BLFC, and like their music resonated so well with inside me that I cried because I was so happy.
That's beautiful. That's
like, I was just awesome. I'm like, this is the fandom right here for me. This is how I feel, and this is just bangingly, you know, awesome.
You know what would be really cool? You should like find their social media page and let them know that they had that impact on you. Because that
trust me,
really,
I did. I told them. Let's see if I can find their Nervous Vulpus. They have a SoundCloud. Okay, so there's a little message thing in Zencastr. See a link. That's the second one that I put there at 8 o'clock.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to listen to it, but some of their music is really good. Like, there's one, I think Empty Spaces is one of them. I actually listen to it sometimes at work, and people are like, who's this band? And I'm like, oh my God, you have no idea. No one in my workplace is a furry. I'm the only one. So I'm like, it's Nervous Vulpus. You got to check him out. Yeah, they're so cool.
I am excited to look them up. Here's another cool thing to look into, because I told you about, like, Magic Records and everything. They do a rap concert at fandom, like at cons and stuff. So if you're at a con and you look in the program and you see the word Digifest, go to that show. It is going to blow your mind. Like, just go with an open mind and just appreciate, like, the incredible artistry that exists in our spaces.
I shall.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, like, going to a rap show is a very... I've been to so many concerts. Literally, I have seen over 100 shows, like, in my life. And, like, you know, my dad would take me to, like, Ozfest, and I'd see all these metal bands and, like, meet all these musicians and shit. And, like, rap shows are special. Rap shows are really, really special because, like, rock is cool. Rock concerts, you know, everyone knows the order of operation. You headbang, you mosh, you bump together, you cheer. Rap shows, you are allowed to sit and vibe and, like, give that energy back with the head nod and everything. And, like, when someone drops, like, a really amazing lyric, you can just, like, you can go, like, oh my God, like, this guy is killing it. You know, like, the energy is so unique. It's so fun. And I feel like more people need to embrace that.
You had mentioned, did you say Tanya Song?
Yes, Tanya Song. She's amazing.
Tanya Song is doing a concert at BLFC this year.
She is an incredibly gifted.
I can see all the different... I probably shouldn't say. Well, so I'm volunteering and I got put on panels. So I'm on the programming panel, like Slack, like channel, whatever. And I was scrolling up and I'm like, oh, cool. I can see all the different like concerts that are going to happen. That's awesome. So cool. Yeah, it looks like Tanya Song, Tigray or Tigre? Tiger? T-Y-G-R-E?
Tigray, yeah.
Tigray. And a few others. It looks really like... Awesome. But I'll definitely go to the Tanya Song one.
Yeah. Yeah. So she does like orchestral and
love, like, that kind of stuff.
She's really, really, really good. I got to see her like compose and like her performance with this full orchestra of like it was in a series about like, you know, the Mayflower and everything. And like, yeah, the first the first thing in the series was like this overly romanticized, really like schlocky kind of like hooray pilgrims, and I remember watching that and going like, Jesus Christ, this feels like a bad Disney movie, like. And then when Tonya's piece came out, it was about like, you know, the spirit of like the people of the land, and like it was amazing. It was one of the most beautiful things that I've ever gotten to witness. She's so talented.
Yeah, I'm looking at her page, and her song, like, artwork looks really beautiful. I can't wait. Like, Whispers of Aught.
I did the art for Whispers of Aught.
I love it. It's so cool looking.
Thank you. Yeah. She gets a lot of really great art commissioned. She's got good taste.
I'll have to give that one a listen. Well, I'm sure we could talk forever, but... I know that Paradox has probably got to go to bed soon.
I mean, I don't work tomorrow, which is weird. Here. So, I do. I know. Yeah.
We know that you're an artist. And so I was wondering if you could touch base real quick with Triangle Manor, because that's something that you do.
Yeah. So I'm part of Triangle Manor. I'm one of the artists that produces designs for them. We're a collective out of Boston. Specifically, we're a queer collective. We're all pretty much furries. I think there's maybe one person who's like kind of furry adjacent, but we are all queer furries. We make art, we make our own clothes. It's all within the fandom. Like, we print our own stickers, we embroider our own stuff. You know, it's all very self-sustained. We've been growing a lot, and like, I'm just very excited and happy to be part of Triangle. It's awesome. If people want to like connect with my art, my handle is pretty much the same across platforms. It's The Hearth Fox, so TheHearthFox, and that's my handle for Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I also have Fur Affinity that I've been working on under the same name. It should be Hearth Fox, but yeah, that's a work in progress. I'm, you know, Twitter's a real mess right now, so I'm trying to like take advantage of my like large platform while I've got it.
Twitter's a hot mess.
It is.
I just got an invite to go join Blue Sky, and they're like, the person was like, you should join as Straight for the Muzzle. And I'm like, oh no. The whole thought of having to start all over again to rebuild yourself takes forever.
What I think is going to happen, I don't think that Twitter is ever going to go away.
And I don't think Blue Sky will take off as much as people are thinking they are.
I think because what happened with Tumblr, remember, Tumblr got bought out and they purged all of the adult content from it. And so
you can still find adult content on it.
That's because I think something changed with the management. I think they either sold it again. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. I don't know if I'm right. But I know that they allow it again now. And I think what's going to happen is Twitter's going to go through a garbage period. And I think Elon is either going to
sell it
or that some kind of government agency is going to say hey, you've been misappropriating this integral social network that is ingrained so hard in the news cycle that we're just going to take it from you because you're being irresponsible with media right now.
I'm hoping he comes. I don't really use this term as much, but I find it funny when I do. I mean, I just love the term. I hope he has a come to Jesus moment. And I hope it hits him really hard.
I hope he has ego death. That's what I hope. I hope. this is gonna sound mean. But
it has to happen.
I don't have inevitable a lot of hope for him too because I know that he's done acid because he was on Twitter live when he was doing acid.
Oh my god,
Jesus!
He was posting the most boring crap, and everyone was just like, "Jesus, man! Even ego death can't make this guy interesting." He's just insufferable, you know.
But if we didn't have people like him in the world, we wouldn't have anyone to point and make fun of. For instance, his awfully god-awful Cybertruck.
Oh, that thing's never going to launch.
It has. They've already been shipping. All the trucks have been shipping out. They've been shipping out in the last few weeks. And I'm just like...
But he hasn't safety tested it. He hasn't done the road test.
I don't know. There's not enough information about it. I think... For the first time, a Cybertruck, I think, ad went out. And I'm just like...
I know that people have been, they've been seeing them on the roads, the company is, test driving them and stuff. But I know that he's also, I feel like the design is not up to his standard because he wants it to be, freaking perfect and he wants it to be indestructible, which, by the way, is not how cars work.
No, they're meant to be destructible.
Yeah, they're supposed to crumple,
That's how you get people to come back and buy more.
Yeah, the car dies so that you don't.
I think I saw Audi or Mercedes had one. They had a version of what Cybertruck was. I mean, I can't believe Cybertruck made it off the concept floor and onto something practical. Because I'm just that thing is so ugly. It looks like a monolith on wheels. It's not good looking.
The funny thing is that he didn't even manage to become the first majorly commercial available Cybertruck. Not even the second. I don't even think the third. Because a company called Rivian already released their fully electric truck. It's $70,000, and it looks amazing. It looks really good. It looks like a good vehicle.
It does.
I've only seen three of them in person, but boy, you notice them. They're really cool.
Did you watch his unveiling of the Cybertruck where he takes a bat to the window and it shatters?
No. I don't watch it. I don't even hate watch. I don't believe in hate watching. So I just if something pisses me off, I avoid it.
So he unveils his truck and he's like, the windows are indestructible. And so he takes a bat and he goes and hits the window and it shatters. And then he's like, oh, you know what? They must have switched out the windows with some regular windows. And I'm like, no, no.
Absolute third grade response. But he's never
so great.
He's never invented a thing in his life. He's not smart. He just buys ideas. That's all he does. And then he
pretty much
He didn't even start PayPal. He bought his way in. He's a fraud.
He owns PayPal.
He used to.
I was gonna say, because that means he owns Venmo. That's gross. Because Venmo is owned by PayPal.
I know that he wanted to change PayPal to X, and that's why he changed Twitter to X, is because like
he wanted
PayPal to be X.com, and everyone told him that's stupid. And like, I think the majority of stockholders like forced him out of the company, and like that's why he named Twitter X, is because he's always wanted to own X.com, even though friggin' Zuckerberg owns the rights. Like he's a walking failure, and it's kind of amazing to witness.
I don't like the fact that I'm on a, I will always call it Twitter. I will never call it X.
I mean, if and, he's going to honor his own trans child's name, why should we honor his stupid website?
Yes, I have said this before.
He's also like really pissed that no one's calling it X and everyone's still calling it Twitter. Which good. I'm just like, yes, thank God.
He's falling into the trap of like, he wants everyone to like him, and he's trying to appease the people that are like the fewer and fewer people left that still really like him, and like he's finding that as he runs out of people who kind of like him, the pickier and more impossible to please they are, and so he's just constantly losing.
I just feel like when I go to Twitter's site, I feel like I'm going to like a strip club.
Low-key get like Facebook vibes off Twitter now. It's yucky. It feels really bad.
Yeah.
Like the only thing kinda missing are my relatives and people I went to high school with. Screw that. You know, like
I feel like with Twitter, at least I can see what I want to see. When I go onto Facebook now and I scroll down, it's just crap loads of ads, things. And it's like suggested for you. And I'm like, by whom? I didn't ask for the suggestion. It's awful.
Yep.
I can't stand looking at Facebook anymore. It irks me.
Stopped being cool. Like it used to be. I remember when Facebook was for students only.
Yeah.
Like you had to have a student email to sign up.
It was like Google. You know, you had to have an invite to get in and have like an email. Now everyone has Google.
Yeah. And I wish Google Waves or Google Trends came back. That would be cool. Or Waves. That was it. It was like Twitter, but you know, it wasn't as tiny. Like it wasn't as like low character.
They tried, but it didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't really get off because I think they approached it like Blue Sky, where it's like you had to have an invite code, and so the base wasn't really there. And
yeah,
it just didn't take off in time. You know.
Blue Sky to me sounds like an alcoholic drink. Sky.
The problem is that I keep freaking using Twitter. I don't check Blue Sky because I
don't. Well, and I have, okay, so I have Furry Network. I have a Furry Network account. I have a bunch of all these, like every time something bad happens, they're like, we're going to create another platform that's just like Twitter, but it's not Twitter. And I'm like, that's great, but it's not going to go anywhere. And everyone's jumping to Blue Sky. And I keep telling my friend Rune, I'm like, okay, but it's not going to go anywhere. It's just going to be like everything else there that tries to compete with it. And it kind of just fizzles out. So enjoy it for what it is, but I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon right now.
Gosh. I mean, I don't want another Mastodon. I do not.
No, I don't even understand. I logged into Mastodon and I'm like, this is it? It feels so barren.
It feels like having a convention in a hotel with no convention space. Like it's just a bunch of tiny rooms. And like you're never seeing everything. You never get the real visibility. Like I've never seen a professional, like full-time furry artist only use Twitter or Mastodon and have like a comparable following. And like, you know, none of them, I've never seen it. It doesn't work. And the fact that like, you know, Snouts, which was like a super popular instance, like, it disappeared off the face of the earth in like 2 weeks because of like drama in the moderation thing. Like, you know, like if that's your platform, if like the most popular like instance can go down over that, like, good Lord, why would I want to use that?
Plus, Mastodon also sounds like a porno site. So there's that too.
Oh, yeah.
I guess actually kind of like the name Mastodon. Like I, and that's kind of why it bums me out and frustrates me. It's because I'm like, oh, it could have been cool. Mastodon is actually a metal band.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yes, it is.
They do really cool math rock. They're really hardcore. They're awesome.
Awesome. Trying to figure out how to take us out.
With a bang.
Yeah, everything we do is with a bang.
That's right.
That's how we do things. I guess real quick, you kind of mentioned where people can find you. Do you want to just kind of give out your socials one more time?
Yeah. So on TikTok, Insta, and Twitter, I'm The Hearth Fox. And that's TheHearthFox. I'm getting back into making Wiggle Vids. It's just been a minute. So, you know, I just got to get back into the flow of things. I've been working so hard on commissions lately. So
we'll be waiting. Yeah,
that's where you can find me.
Well, it was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much.
This interview, it doesn't happen very often where we are set on what we want to ask, but then maybe one or two questions really sets the mood and we just kind of go in that direction. And that's I'm really awesome. Glad that we went in a different direction than asking like the standard questions that we usually try to come up with for each person. So this was a fun, kind of like a deep thinking episode, and I'm pretty sure our fans are really going to appreciate this.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. If you ever want me back, just reach out. I'd be happy to.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely gonna have you back. Folks, if you want to find us, you know where to find us because you're listening to us, obviously. you can email us at talktothemuzzle@gmail.com. Send us anything you want to, pictures, questions, and we'll answer them. You can find us on Twitter at From the Muzzle. And then we also have our Telegram chat group that you can join, where there's currently 146 members. Not everyone chats at the same time, but it is a very active chat that goes on 24/7. No joke. Sometimes I'll check it when I wake up randomly in the morning at like 3 o'clock, and there'll be 70 messages, and I'll be like, why are you still talking? But then again, you know, they're all from around the world. So it's probably like 2 p.m. for them. Who knows?
Yep.
But we always thank you guys for listening into our episodes. And if you guys have suggestions for guests that you'd like us to look out for or to see if we can get a hold of, please let us know. Other than that, Paradox, do you have anything?
I guess the only thing that I will say is I apologize for being so quiet this episode, but this episode, like we mentioned, has just covered some pretty deep topics and it's really given me a lot to think about. So like, I don't know, I just get real quiet when I think. Again, it was a absolute pleasure to have you on today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Like
Space said, please come back. Like, it was really good. And I'm glad that we did get to have an episode where we got to kind of like shoot from the hip and have like a deep conversation. Sometimes it's fun to go off script.
I think it'd be fun to kind of really delve further into like paganism and Therianism.
Yes,
I feel like we scratched the surface, but I feel like there's more that we can talk about.
If I can make a recommendation, just in case you want to like kind of dig into that mindset a little bit more, there's a series on Netflix called The Midnight Gospel, and it's only like 8 episodes, and boy, it starts off silly, but it's in the format of like an intergalactic podcast. So like you're watching things happen on the screen, but you're really just listening to the conversation.
Nice.
They get a lot of things right. So check them out.
I will
look into it.
I'll check them out before my subscription runs out. I only got a couple more weeks left.
I'll let you borrow our space.
Yay!
I get to return the favor.
Yay! You're so nice.
Thanks. You're nice. Oh.
And our guest was very nice.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.